Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the June 9th, 2026 meeting of the Sussex County Council. We're going to call the meeting to order, and the first is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good afternoon, members. At this time, I see no recommended changes to today's agenda.
Okay, we'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Lloyd.
Second.
Second, Mr. Rosenbaum. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Rosenbaum. Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. Next is the approval of the minutes of June 2nd, 2026. Are there any additions, deletions, or corrections? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have one, and it is from the House of David Milford, Delaware, Inc., thanking council for their support of the House of David's mobile food delivery and distribution expansion.
Okay, thank you. Next is public comment. Now's the time for public comment. It's where anyone would have 3 minutes to talk about something the county has clear jurisdiction over. And when the green light comes on, you have 3 minutes. When the amber light comes on, you have 1 minute. And when the red light comes on, I'll ask you to wrap it up. Okay, we have none. Okay, operator, would you check online, please?
If there is anyone on the line who would like to make a public comment, please dial 5-star. Again, if there is anyone on the line who would like to make a public comment, please dial 5-star. At this time, no one wishes to speak.
Okay, thank you. Next is the consent agenda. We have one item. It's a proclamation for the Cape and Lopen High School Girls Lacrosse State Champions. I will entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Ms. Grunenbaum. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Grunenbaum.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. Next up, the County Administrator Report, Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Two items today. Item one, the Delaware Animal Services Annual Performance Report for 2025 is attached. The report lists the total number of calls for service by location, as well as a breakdown of the types of calls received in Sussex County. In total, there were 5,984 new calls for service in 2025. Item two, Sussex County would like to thank the community for its support during the recent EMS blood drive held on Thursday, May 21st at the Public Safety Complex in partnership with the Blood Bank of Delmarva. Donors provided 45 units of blood. This is the third annual event and was held to coincide with the anniversary of the county EMS launch of the Whole Blood Program, which began in 2023. Sussex County EMS and the Blood Bank of Delmarva look forward to hosting this event next year and continue supporting life-saving efforts for citizens throughout Sussex County. Thank you, Mr. President.
Oh, thank you.
Can I make a quick comment? I'm really glad to hear that we're doing the blood bank drive, and I think that's great. And I understand that it was on the news this morning that the blood bank has declared a blood emergency. So they have less than 2 days' supply, and if anybody is so inclined, it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, thank you. Next, Ms. Andrea Wall, Manager of Accounting. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. President and members of council. I'm here this afternoon to make a recommendation for our insurance placements for FY27. As we approach the July 1st renewal of the county's insurance program, our broker Alliant recommended marketing all lines of coverage to ensure the county continued to receive competitive pricing and appropriate coverage options. Through this process, Alliant secured competitive renewal terms across all lines of coverage, resulting in an overall premium increase of only 1.5%. below budgeted estimates. One notable outcome of the renewal process was a reduction in the county's cyber insurance premium. This year, the county had the option to obtain full coverage limits through AmTrust at a lower premium cost, while also increasing the sublimit for e-crime coverage. Because the proposal from AmTrust was favorable to the county from both a financial and coverage perspective, we will be transitioning the cyber coverage to that carrier. All remaining lines of coverage will remain with the incumbent carriers. Your packet included the expiring costs and premiums for FY27 for each line of coverage. At this time, I can answer any questions or I have a motion.
I am curious. I know we constantly have a battle with cybersecurity and fending off cyber attacks. What can you describe the coverage that we have and how robust it is?
So it is robust. It covers all the typical things. It also includes crisis management, a list of vetted vendors that would aid us in responding to any incidents in our IT department. We carry adequate limits for our size of government based on what our consultant and carrier sees.
In terms of dollars? What kind of car?
So currently we have $6 million in cyber coverage.
Mm-hmm. Deemed adequate.
Is deemed adequate for the size entity that we are. Mm-hmm. And I hope that it's something we never have to utilize.
Well, yes.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Do you have a motion?
I do have a motion. Based on the recommendation of Alliant Insurance Services, Insurance Buyers Council, and the Sussex County Finance Department, that Sussex County Council authorizes the placement of insurance coverage as presented for the period of July 1st, 2026 through June 30th, 2027 at a cost not to exceed $2,543,139.
Okay, pleasure of council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. McCarron. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Grunebaum.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we are now up to old business. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So it looks like Mr. Lawson is passing down motions. The first item of business is old business, ordinance number 2601. And Mr. Moore, would you like me to read the short title of that? Okay. It is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 72, Article 2, Section 72-24, and Chapter 115, Article 4, 6, 7, and 8, regarding Sections 115-20, 115-29, 115-37, 115-45, and 115-53, regarding affordably priced rental units and the Sussex County Rental Unit SCRP program. So we were before you previously and had a good, robust discussion about not just the amendment as introduced in the public hearings, but as a result of the public hearings and conversation with staff, some additional changes that should be made to the ordinance to make it more workable, and also be sure to capture as many folks within the SCRP program. That's involved a review by Mr. Lawson, Ms. Jennings, Ms. Nauman, Mr. Whitehouse, myself, going through this to make sure we have an improvement. So with that, what I'd like to do is make some motions to change the text of the ordinance as introduced, if I could proceed with that.
Can we do those at one time?
No, we have to do each one and vote on it.
Separately.
Each one separately.
Okay.
Yes. So, the first one has to do with rent and the allocation of the units among folks earning 60, 70, or 80% of AMI. So, the first motion is: be it moved that the rental requirements for SCRP units be amended at Section 1 of the ordinance regarding Section 72-24 quote rent close quote at lines 74 through 80, so that this section now states as follows. Section 72-24, SCRP units. A, rent, one in parentheses. Rent shall be established and updated annually by the department for the SCRP units based on 25% of the household income in the amounts of 60%, 70%, and 80% of the area median income, adjusted for household size and unit size of the respective unit, not including trash services, parking, water, and sewer utilities, and any other charges to be paid by the tenant, based on the following unit allocations. A in parentheses, the number of units in the SCRP charging rent at 25% of household income for 60% of the area median income adjusted for household size shall be multiplied by a factor of 1.67. B in parentheses, the number of units in the SCRP charging rent at 25% of household income for 70% of the area median income adjusted for household size shall be multiplied by a factor of 1.25. And C in parentheses, the number of units in the SCRP charging rent at 25% of household income for 80% of the area medium income adjusted for household size shall be multiplied by a factor of 1.00. There shall always be a mixture of the units described in parentheses A, parentheses B, and parentheses C above. The total value of the multipliers for all of the units must exceed 25% of the total number of units in the SCRP and must include a mixture of units at 60%, 70%, and 80% AMI. Provided, however, that the rent charged for market rate units similar to SCRP units in the SCRP development shall not be within 20% of the countywide SCRP rents for that type of SCRP unit. If this occurs, the department shall adjust the SCRP rate table for the SCRP development so that the rent for the SCRP unit is 20% less than the market rate rent for comparable units in the SCRP development. And we added that last part so that, you know, there wasn't a situation where the market rate sort of overlapped or exceeded the SCRP rate.
One question.
Sure.
There was a line, it was probably second to last paragraph, said must be a mixture of 60, 70, and 80. Can you just verify that?
Yes, that we added that so that it wouldn't all be 80% or 70% or 60%.
And also to verify, and I'm sorry, I'm passing down another motion that has updated information on it, and I apologize for the confusion. The reference to the mixture is to ensure that at least one unit in each of the tier, 60, 70, 80, at least one unit is rented in that tier. So we use the terminology mixture of units.
So just to clarify, if there were 14 total units going into one of those categories, 14th would have to be something different than the rest. Is that right?
No, it would be if there's 14 SCRP units, you'd have to have at least one 60%, one 70, and then the rest could be 80. You know, so there's always going to be at least one of each category of SCRP units.
I do think that's a little different than what we talked about last week. I don't think it's a huge change, but I just wonder why. Like in one of the examples, it was all of them could be 80% or all of them could be 70. I just wonder, is there a practical reason to have one of each at least?
It was, you know, again, that was a discussion with staff, and if you wanted to amend it, we could take that sentence out, but it was just so we were at least capturing, you know, the range of income types and unit types. So
yeah, I think that's an important change, frankly, because otherwise you could build a lot of units that wouldn't capture the rent that, as we saw on the chart, a number of people could afford. So it's important to keep a range, I think.
A range, certainly, but just one of each.
Well, we could do more than one, but we need to.
Yeah, at least one.
I queued in on it, that's all.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like, this would be the time for comment, and certainly there's been a lot of discussion about where we're at, AMI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what percentages and what percentages are viable. You know, the devil's in the details, and, you know, I hope in a year we find out that this is something that we've had success with. There's a trade-off, certainly with, you know, these are buy-rate projects, and we've given a lot as far as building length, setbacks, and building height. But at the same time, no matter what you give, these have to be viable to be built, or we will get zero units going forward. So, you know, I do make a promise that this is something that I want to keep my eye on, and I think probably all of us are going to keep our eye on. And if we didn't get it exactly right, you know, we turn right back around and make sure we get it right the second time. But we do have to start from somewhere, and these are pretty sweeping changes overall to the existing program. And I think we really have a, you know, what appears to be a good start that all five of us can support going forward. So.
Oh, I agree.
I just wonder if there should be a mandatory review built into the ordinance, you know, so the council looks at it either bi-yearly or.
Yeah, we had that in the original code, had that, but because it's somewhat on the heels of this, you know, we took it out. But there's no reason why, you know, we can't come back in a year or, you know, in 6 months or whatever,
can,
and report. Yeah.
Just to keep it top of mind, because.
But I did confirm with Ms. Nauman that we do, she goes over this every year anyway. So that's probably one of her steps she's going to look at.
Bring it back and report.
Makes a report back to us, and then we can.
Yeah. I mean, well, and as a practical matter, we'll know because these have to come to P&Z for site plan review, you know, so, you know, and there's a process with them. It's, you know, obviously she has the data, but you know, we're involved, P&Z is involved with site plan review and all that that goes with it. I'm involved with Ms. Nauman on the restrictive covenants and the agreement to make sure that they're complying with everything on the front end. So, you know, at any time anybody sort of wants a snapshot of where these stand, we can give it to you in addition to a formal report from Ms. Nauman's office.
I think this is a great starting point.
Well, that's motion one that we've got a vote on, so.
Okay. Okay, pleasure of council.
Motion to approve.
Motion, Mr. McCarron.
Second.
Second, Ms. Grunebaum. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Grunebaum.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
So the next motion just sort of ties in to the language we just approved. In each of the residential or each of the zoning districts where SCRP projects can go, it's listed as a permitted use. So we had to change up some of the language just to connect the two dots. So the second motion is, be it moved that the SRP requirements be amended at sections 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 of the ordinance regarding sections 115-20, 115-29, 115-37, 115-45, and 115-53 regarding permitted uses at lines 95 to 99, 159 to 163, 222 to 225, 286 to 290, and 350 to 354, so that these sections now state as follows in each instance. The Sussex County Rental Program, or SCRP, developed, governed by, and subject to Chapter 72, where there are SCRP units provided in accordance with minimum allocation calculations required by Section 72-24 therein. The SCRP development must also satisfy the following criteria, end of quote. And again, that just connects those dots. It just relates it back to the language we just did as a permitted use in those zoning districts.
Okay, pleasure of council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Ms. Grunebaum.
Second.
Second, Mr. McCarron. Any questions? And then we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Grunebaum.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
The next one has to do with the setbacks. I think everybody realized that there's not a one-size-fits-all for setbacks. If you're next to, you know, commercial or high-intensity use, that we don't need the large setbacks. And frankly, the commercial property could be built near to the property line itself. So this reflects that, and it says, be it moved that the SCRP requirements be amended at sections 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 of the ordinance regarding sections 115-20, 115-29, 115-37, 115-45, and 115-53 regarding permitted uses at lines 120 to 124, 184 to 188, 247 to 251, 311 to 315, and 375 to 379, so that these sections now state as follows in each instance. There shall be a setback around the entire site as follows: 50 feet from any boundary adjoining a residential district and from all state road rights-of-way. This setback shall incorporate perimeter buffers and perimeter buffer protection areas if required, set forth in section 99-21A. 10 feet from any boundary adjoining a commercial, business, marine, institutional, or industrial district, perimeter buffers and perimeter buffer protection areas shall not be required.
Okay, pleasure of council.
Motion to approve.
Motion, Mr. McCarron.
Second.
Second, Mr. Lloyd. Any questions? All right, then we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron?
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd?
Yes.
Ms. Grunebaum?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
And then the last one, motion four, it increases the height to 60 feet, but keeps that step back requirement if you're above 42 feet and next to a residential district. But it also eliminates the building separation and building length requirements that would apply to multifamily structures or townhouses. So we've excluded those requirements from the provisions of an SCRP project. Sort of as a footnote to that, some point later we're going to revisit that code-wide, but right now it exempts SCRPs from those length and building separation requirements. So this one is, be it moved that the SCRP requirements be amended at sections 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 of the ordinance regarding sections 115-20, 115-29, 115-37, 115-45, and 115-53 regarding permitted uses at lines 129 to 135, 189 to 199, 252 to 262, 316 to 326, and 380 to 390, so that these conditions now state as follows in each instance. The height of any building shall not exceed 60 feet, provided, however, that if the height exceeds 42 feet and the site is adjacent to a residential district, the buildings shall include a step-back design above 42 feet and or an increased setback to ensure an appropriate relationship between the higher density SCRP project and uses of lower intensity or height, existing or future, outside the proposed SCRP project. The linear dimensional requirements, including length and building separation, contained in section 115-188D, parentheses 6, close parentheses, and E, parentheses 1, close parentheses, and parentheses 2, close parentheses, shall not apply.
Okay, pleasure of council.
Motion to approve.
Motion, Mr. McCarron.
Second.
Second, Ms. Grunebaum. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Grunebaum.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
So that's it, and what I will do now, with your permission, is read the short title again as amended so that you can act on the ordinance with those amendments. So it is, again, ordinance number 2601, an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 72, Article 2, Section 72-24, and Chapter 115, Article 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, regarding sections 115.20, 115.29, 115.37, 115.45, and 115.53, regarding affordably priced rental units and the Sussex County Rental Unit SCRP program as amended.
Okay, pleasure of council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. McCarron. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Grunebaum.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Let's hope third time's a charm.
I vote yes. I vote yes, motion carried.
Thank you very much. There's, you know, that's a really good project for Sussex County, or good program, I should say. And, you know, as you know, we've been working through it to see more and more of these happen. Hopefully, with freeing up some of the geometrical constraints and getting a little more variety in the rent that can be charged by the developers, you know, one of the things, as you know, with SCRPs is that folks need to hold on to them long term. It's not like a subdivision where you build it and you're out. So that's always been sort of the baseline goal with this. I mean, I still think we've said that the past two times this is going to be a living ordinance. You know, we're going to continue to look at it and dial it forward, dial it back, depending on how things go. So I appreciate, first of all, everybody's effort. This has been a real team effort, and the input we've got from the public and developers and county staff as well. So the next one is ordinance number 26-03. This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 99, Article 2, Sections 99-9, public hearing on preliminary plat approval or disapproval, and Chapter 115, Article 4, Section 115-25, height, area, and bulk requirements of the Code of Sussex County regarding design criteria for all subdivisions. And it looks like, as I'm saying this, the motion's being handed down. This is the ordinance that really dealt with two things. It improved Section 99.9C of the subdivision code with those items that need to be considered as part of a subdivision hearing. It moved the superior design standards into 99.9C so that they apply to all subdivisions. It gave clarity to how that information has to be presented, and it also gave clarity based on, frankly, lessons learned from Mr. Whitehouse's staff on interconnectivity between subdivisions. There was some good feedback that we received during the public hearing, and as a result of that, we have three fairly minor motions to address with your permission, if I could.
Please give us your motions.
The first one is just a minor amendment that was proposed during the public hearing regarding screening from view. It adds screening items from view within the subdivision as well as outside of the subdivision. So, it be it moved that the introduced ordinance regarding Section 99-9C of the Code of Sussex County be amended as Section 1 of the ordinance regarding Section 99-9C, parentheses 10, at lines 105 through 107, so that this subsection now includes view screening within a subdivision as well as for neighboring properties outside the subdivision, to state as follows. What it states is 10, that objectionable features, including but not limited to utility infrastructure, parking areas, loading zones, and outdoor storage areas are screened from view within the proposed subdivision and from the view of neighboring properties and roadways.
Okay.
These are what we had on email, right?
Yes. Yeah, it should be the same.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, pleasure of council.
Move for adoption.
Are we got these all as one? Or?
No, we got to do each,
gotta
each
do them
motion.
All separately. Yeah.
We're going to read a short title on each one, or? How do we do that?
No. We already read the short title. I just did the first motion, so okay, we just need.
Gotcha. I'm with you.
Okay. Motion, Ms. Grunebaum.
Second.
Second, Mr. Riley. Any questions on the motion? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron?
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd?
Yes.
Ms. Grunenbaum?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
Thank you. The next one, there was some comment about adding cross-references to other sections of the code when applicable in 99.9C. We kind of already did that already in many places. That was an improvement that was made previously, but there was one where we thought it would be a good idea to add that regarding street design. So it is be it moved that the introduced ordinance regarding section 99-9C of the Code of Sussex County be amended at section 1 of the ordinance regarding section 99-9C16 at line 133 to cross-reference additional street design standards as stated as follows. And it is 16, no lots shall have direct access to any state-maintained roads, and the proposed subdivision shall conform to the requirements of sections 99-17 and 99-18 regarding street layout and street design.
That could be very, very important in certain cases.
Yeah. Now, one thing, just as a reminder on that, because this came up, and I just want to remind everybody that no lot shall have direct access to any state-maintained roads. This applies to major subdivisions. Minors are excluded from that. But we know, you know, when folks carve out, five lots or whatever on the street, that's still allowed. So.
Okay, pleasure of council.
For adoption.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Ms. Grunenbaum. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron?
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd?
Yes.
Ms. Grunenbaum?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
All right, and the third and final one on this has to do with that interconnectivity. And recall that there were questions about whether the interconnectivity had to be designed or whether it actually had to be built. And the concern about, you know, building the interconnectivity had to do with, well, why should we build a road to our property line that may never, you know, be developed on the other side, you know, the road to nowhere type scenario. The thing that staff is concerned about, and rightfully so, is that that may be true, but at least has to be designed so it can be built, so that if that interconnectivity does ever present itself, there's a right-of-way area there that's designed and it's graded and there's not stormwater management or whatever in the way that would prevent the interconnectivity to occur. The second thing is this makes it clear that if you're the last one in and there's interconnectivity to your property and you're subdivided next door, that you do have to construct it to make that happen. So this one, the third and last one, is be it moved that the introduced ordinance regarding section 99-17C, quote, street layout, close quote, of the Code of Sussex County be amended at section 2 of the ordinance regarding section 99-17E at lines 182 to 196 to clarify the design and construction requirements of interconnectivity and state as follows. This is what it states. E, where interconnectivity is required to adjacent tracts that are not presently subdivided, the proposed collector streets in the subdivision shall be extended to the boundary lines with such adjacent tracts. Where there is not currently interconnectivity designed or constructed on the adjacent tracts, such interconnectivity shall be designed and shown to the property boundary or boundaries on the final site plan. The final site plan shall also include a temporary construction easement for the benefit of the adjacent tract to be used to facilitate the completion of the fully constructed interconnectivity. Permanent signage shall be installed at the point of interconnectivity, stating that this is the location of future interconnectivity with the adjacent tract. Where there is currently interconnectivity designed or constructed on the adjacent tracts, then the interconnectivity shall be fully engineered and constructed within the subdivision and on the adjacent tracts, unless the commission determines that such construction within the adjacent tract is not possible for legal or engineering reasons. Whenever possible, such interconnectivity shall be designed at a perpendicular alignment to the property boundary. No buildings, structures, or stormwater management features shall be located within the areas of interconnectivity.
So if you're the last guy in and you have to build the connection, you have to go beyond your property line and all the way over to his road.
Right, and that's why there's that temporary construction easement that's included.
You have to build the whole connection, not just, not just your half.
It's going to be stubbed off at some point, yeah. So it's not going to be, you know, like an extension, because we do require that now, and the code requires it, that it has to be stubbed to a point. So
yeah, so it's just 2 or 3 feet off the road.
Yeah, I don't want to say 2 or 3, but not extensive.
Yeah, but not 40.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So you're going to, the last guy in is going to build the 40 plus his.
Yeah. Yeah, or whatever the measurement may be.
Yeah, whatever the measurement is.
Okay, pleasure.
And internally, I will say, because it's just not language in the code, that's something that's being dealt with by staff and also being inspected by county engineering when they're on site or reviewing engineering plans for site as well. So.
Okay.
It's clear who does what, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, pleasure of council.
Motion to approve.
Motion, Mr. McCarron.
Second.
Second, Ms. Grunenbaum. Any questions on the motion? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron?
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd?
Yes.
Ms. Quintabel?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
And I misspoke. There's one more motion. Sorry.
I had one more.
Yeah. I think the pages got stuck together. This is the fourth one. It just regards the effective date. Previously, we had some language in there that tied the effective date to steps that were involved in the PLUS process. Mr. Whitehouse had some conversations with Off-State Planning Coordination about concerns about how that would work in real life. And so we proposed some revised language, and that is regarding well, let me read the motion. Be it moved that the effective date in Section 4 of the introduced ordinance at lines 353 to 359 be amended to state as follows, and that is Section 4 effective date. This ordinance shall become effective upon adoption, provided, however, that shall not apply to any subdivision or residential plan community district applications that have been submitted to the Office of Planning and Zoning with the appropriate application fee fully paid.
Okay. Pleasure of council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Lloyd, second. Mr. Riley, any questions on the motion? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron?
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd?
Yes.
Ms. Quintabel?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Okay, and with that, I will again read the short title as amended.
I have a comment. Should I wait till I have the voting, my turn to vote, or make it now about the 99C changes?
Probably at the time you make your vote, I would think.
Correct.
Okay, thanks. Yes.
So this is ordinance number 26-03, and it is an ordinance to amend Chapter 99, Article 2, Sections 99-9, Public Hearing on Preliminary Plat Approval or Disapproval, and Chapter 115, Article 4, Section 115-25, Height, Area, and Bulk Requirements of the Code of Sussex County regarding design criteria for all subdivisions as amended.
Okay. Pleasure of council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second. Mr. McCarron. Any questions? Quintabel, did you? I'll wait to get to your vote and we'll go. Mr. McCarron?
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd?
Yes.
Ms. Quintabel?
Well, as I have indicated in previous comments, I remain concerned that there is no provision calling for any plan or report on the adequacy of infrastructure in application for residential development. Sussex County does require such a report for C4 plan commercial district and for any large-scale C1 general commercial district and any large-scale CR1 commercial district. In fact, both C1 general commercial district and CR1 commercial residential district state that infrastructure shall be completed prior to the issuance of a certificate of compliance. Yet the most common form of development driving Sussex County's growth, residential subdivisions and ARGR zoning, have no infrastructure adequacy requirement. When we set up the Land Use Reform Task Force, which did great work at considerable cost in both time and resources, the one issue not addressed that we specifically asked for was how development could be phased to better match infrastructure capacity. Infrastructure concerns, congestion on roads, capacity of our schools, stress on our emergency services, destruction of our environmental defenses against extreme weather are the concerns that are top of mind for my constituents and the voters who elected me. I'm disappointed that the Land Use Reform Task Force didn't address this issue and that the changes we are making to 99C do not address the issue. Having said that, nevertheless, I vote yes.
Okay, Mr. Riley.
Sure you don't want to make a motion for an amendment? Sounds like it.
No, I don't. Thank you.
I vote yes and hope that the state don't override all of our authority and take it up to Dover.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate everybody's input on all these initiatives.
That was a heavy lift.
Thank you,
Vince. And we're still lifting, so, yeah.
Mr. Whitehouse.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, members of council. We have three more items of old business today. The first is conditional use number 2631, filed on behalf of Zion Church Ventures, LLC. County Council may remember this from the last County Council meeting. The recommendation had not been received at the time of the public hearing before council from the Planning and Zoning Commission. I can confirm that the Planning and Zoning Commission, at its most recent meeting on June 3rd of this year, recommended a partial approval, partial denial of the applicant's request to modify conditions of approval, and within your paperless packet, there's a memo including a copy of that motion, along with the reasons for the Commission's recommendation.
Okay.
So the purpose of placing it on today's agenda was just to announce receipt of the Commission's recommendation.
Okay, so we can put it back on. Mr.
Yes, what we have is a period of five business days for any member of the public to comment based upon the recommendations made by planning and zoning.
Okay, so okay. Do we need to do any motions? We don't need to, right? Okay. Okay. Next, Mr.
Our next item is conditional use number 2554, filed on behalf of E. Johnson Holdings, LLC. County Council may remember this from the public hearing that was held on April 28th of this year. And at the time, the council hadn't received the commission's recommendation. And then that recommendation was reported to County Council at Council's meeting of May 19th. Following that announcement, there was a period of 5 business days for receipt of additional comments. I can confirm we did not receive any more comments, and so the public record automatically closed 5 business days from May 19th.
Were you referring to the number 3 on the design or on the...
E. Johnson Holdings, LLC. So
number 4.
Oh, okay.
The recommendation was announced on May 19th.
Yes.
And the motion was then to allow 5 business days after that. So.
Mr. Yes. Moore, would you give a short title, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a self-storage facility to be located on a portion of land, a portion of a certain parcel of land lying and being in Sussex County, containing 12.05 acres, more or less, for reasons given by planning and zoning numbered 1 through 6, with conditions 7A through M.
Okay, pleasure of council.
Motion to adopt.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. McCarron. Are there any questions? All right, we'll take the vote. I'll go first on this one because it's in my district. I agree with planning and zoning's recommendations and conditions. I vote yes. Mr. McCarron.
Based upon the testimony heard during the presentation and the recommendation of planning and zoning, I vote yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Based on the testimony at the hearing and P&Z's recommendation, I vote yes.
Ms. Guernabell.
Based on the recommendation of planning and zoning and the evidence provided at the hearing, I vote yes.
Mr. Riley.
I also vote yes based on the recommendation of planning and zoning and what we heard at the hearing.
Okay, motion passed.
Thank you. Our next item of all business is conditional use number 2555, filed on behalf of Bittersweet Investments, LLC. Again, like the last application, it's actually adjacent to the last application. County Council may remember this from the public hearing that was held before Council at its meeting of April 28th of this year. Again, like with the last application, Council had not had a copy of the Commission's recommendation at the time of the public hearing. That was received announced on the May 19th County Council meeting, followed by a period of 5 business days for receipt of additional public comments, and I can confirm that we did not receive any additional comments. So.
Okay, Mr. Moore, would you give us a short time, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for an office and storage to be located on a certain portion of a parcel of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 5.78 acres, more or less, for the reasons given by planning and zoning numbered 1 through 8 with conditions 9A through I.
Okay, pleasure of council.
Move to adopt.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. McCarron, I heard you first. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Again, this is in my district, I'll go first. I agree with planning and zoning's recommendation, I vote yes. Mr. McCarron.
Based upon the presentation heard during the hearing and the recommendation of planning and zoning, I vote yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
I too vote yes based on the information at the hearing and P&Z's recommendation.
Ms. Guernabell.
Based on the hearing and the recommendation of planning and zoning, I vote yes.
Mr. Riley.
I also agree with planning and zoning's recommendation, I vote yes.
Okay, motion carried. Thank you very much. Okay, next is a grant request. Ms. Jennings, I think we're done, right?
Oh, wait, we have a presentation on solar arrays?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So, and I can be real quick, Ms. President, on this. So this follows a presentation that staff provided to the Planning and Zoning Commission back in May, that the Commission had specifically requested an update on the solar array implementation for the reason that we've seen quite a number of conditional uses. And when we put them all into a table, there's 59 CUs, conditional uses, that we're tracking in total, and a copy of this is in your paperless packet, along with a map showing their spatial distribution through there at the county. In total, there are 59 projects that we're tracking in total. 14 of them, we actually went in and checked what had building permits. Some have building permits, but have not implemented the panels. 14 have been implemented, and they're shaded in green, and you can see that there's statistical data in terms of how many acres the sites cover, how many acres the panels cover. Nine of the applications, which are the ones shaded in blue, were withdrawn, so those applications are not progressing. And if you total up the panel coverage area of all the conditional uses that are currently in that table, they come to 1,550 acres in total. But we also included a different number as well. We included the actual total site area, which is a much, much larger number, and that covers a scenario where you've got a tract of land, but the panels only cover a smaller area. So we've included all of that along with a map showing where they're all located in the county. But there are 59 in total that we're tracking in the last 10 years.
Questions?
Yeah, what would be like an example of why one of these might not come to fruition, actually be installed?
Interconnectivity. So you have to get, and we explain this to the Planning and Zoning Commission, that there's a chicken and the egg scenario that goes on, is that in order to submit for interconnectivity approval through the energy regulators, you have to get all your ducks in a row, and you have to have your land use approvals effectively in place. And this is one of the reasons we saw such a volume of new conditional uses all coming in, is that they have to get approval from the county first. Then you can apply for and receive interconnection approval, and only then can you go through the building permit process and build it. So you have to come to us first. So we're just a stop along the way. So if you're not approved for interconnectivity approval, then your project can't interconnect. So.
Last question, Sarah Jane, would be, do you think they, anticipating that, maybe they kind of aggressively go for more than what they think will actually be approved, just understanding that a percentage of them will fall off? Like, do you think they're bringing us extra applications knowing that only a few of them might actually make it to the end?
I can't speak for the development community, sure. but there's definitely more coming to us than we're seeing actually implemented. Mm-hmm. So there is a logic to what you're saying. I don't know that as fact. Sure. But I now share your thought process that maybe that is what's going on.
Well, I just saw an onslaught of them, and some are in my district, so it made me wonder about that.
Yeah, my question was kind of related to what you're getting at, I think, which is, do you have any idea of the percentages of the applications that get approved for interconnectivity?
What we don't have in this table is data of how many of them actually have interconnection approval. We only have data on what's been approved and what's been built.
Yeah.
So we don't
know the percentage of approval. We don't know the rate at which these get approved.
Less than 50% of what we're seeing is implemented, if that helps to ballpark it. But I don't know what has interconnection approval, because there may be projects that have interconnection approval and county approval, but we've not seen construction. Yeah. So there's a gap.
How long does it take with the electric companies to get all their permitting and all that done?
That's beyond me. I do know that they have to get land use approval before they can even begin that. So.
That takes quite a while, though, doesn't it, because of the power?
I would imagine so, yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say it again. I'm concerned about the number of acres of farmland that these chew up. To me, this is more of an industrial application than a AR1 type use, and it really concerns me. I mean, the 3,000 and some acres, now that's potentially, that's not all, but it's potentially could be 3,682 acres. I mean, that's a substantial amount of land that's being lost. It's open land, open space, open farmland.
Correct.
And I'm just wondering if there we couldn't consider incentivizing other places for solar. I'm not saying that solar panels are bad or wrong or, you know, unnecessary, but where do they go? I mean, could we offer an incentive to people building larger buildings like warehouses, you know, by changing their bulk requirements or heights, you know, things of that nature, giving them some incentive to put the solar panels on the roof, you know? And I take note that with the new state courthouse here in Georgetown, they elected to not put solar panels on the roof for some reason. But to me, that would have been a perfect location. And I would much rather see more of that and less farmland. And I don't know if that's something that the council has the ability to influence. I would hope we could somehow.
Okay. We could certainly explore that. The comprehensive plan is coming for an update. To the volume number in terms of the number of acres, that if these are not implemented in 3 years, they'll start lapsing.
They revert back to, and they could reapply too.
Correct, and so they'd have to go back through the process and seek new approval if they couldn't get an extension. To the rooftop coverage, that even commercial and residential rooftop solar arrays, if they're on existing buildings, the code currently permits them by right. That is an incentive, but it's not much of an incentive.
Not much.
It just means that you don't have to get conditional use approval.
Right.
So there may be other incentives that we can explore, like relaxing setbacks or something.
Because of the ethanol mandate, 40% of our corn crop in this country goes into gas tanks.
Well, that's true.
We grew 85,000 acres of corn in 2024 in Sussex County, so about 30,000 acres in, I mean, we all know it went to the poultry industry.
Well, it's probably
nationwide, 30,000 acres in Sussex went into gas tanks.
But you're right, it could be going in gas tanks. But nevertheless, I mean, it does help keep our fuel costs in line, too.
Sure.
And I just have a personal aversion to the way they look, but maybe that's not relevant.
Anybody else? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Whitehouse.
Thank you.
Okay, next. Grant request, Ms. Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. There's one grant request. It is the Downtown Milford. They are requesting $5,000 for their Independence Day celebration. Last grant received for this organization was $2,250 for their Ladybug Festival, which was $1,250 for Mr. Burton, $1,000 for Mr. Wilson, and Mr. McCarron placed this one on the agenda.
Mr. McCarron.
Yeah, motion to approve the $5,000 from the 2nd District.
Okay, motion, Mr. McCarron, to approve $5,000 to Downtown Milford Incorporated for their Independence Day celebration. Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Mr. Lloyd. Are there any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Grunebaum.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Next is the introduction of proposed ordinances. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I have one, and it's in your district, Mr. President. An ordinance grant a conditional use plan in an MR medium density residential district for multifamily dwelling units, 106 units, to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 61.67 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
That is all.
Okay, thank you. Next, council member comments. Council member comments. Okay, seeing none. Mr. Lawson, do we need to recess for 15 and then for executive or we?
I think we should squeeze executive in,
okay,
in the next 15 right, and come back by 1:30-ish.
Okay, we'll entertain a motion to go into executive session.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Lloyd, second. Mr. McCarron, any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCare.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
Ms. Grunebaum.
Yes.
Mr. Rowe.
Yes.
I vote yes. We are now in executive.